Okay, I've got 9:30 here. I'll call the meeting of this interim committee meeting to order. The meeting will be held in accordance with House Rule 10.01. Roll call, Mr. Smith, please.
Chair Sundin.
Present.
Sundin is present. Vice Chair Vang.
Present.
Present. Representative Anderson.
Anderson present.
Anderson present. Representative Burkle.
Burkle present.
Burkle present. Representative Eklund.
Present.
Eklund present. Representative Hansen R.
Here.
Hansen R. present. Representative Hansen J.
Hansen J. present.
Hansen J. present. Representative Cleavorn.
Cleavorn present.
Cleavorn present. Representative Lippert.
Lippert present.
Lippert present. Representative Lewick.
Lewick present.
Lewick present. Representative Miller. Representative Nelson.
Nelson present.
Nelson present. Representative Thompson.
Thompson present.
Present. All right, we have a quorum, Mr. Chair.
Okay, thank you. Today we have two sets of minutes ready for approval. Vice Chair Vang, you reviewed these minutes of our last regular session meeting. Can I get a motion?
Mr. Chair, I move the adoption of the minutes for the meeting of April 9th, 2021.
Any questions or corrections on the said minutes? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Okay, the motion prevails. Minutes are adopted. We also have minutes of the informational hearing, we did prior to special session. Representative Vang, do you have a motion?
Mr. Chair, I move the adoption minutes for the meeting of June 14, 2021.
Any questions or corrections? Seeing none. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Okay, that motion prevails. Minutes are adopted. Quickly, and we will be moving briskly, so let's limit our comments, save questions to the end. Scheduling meetings during the interim is a challenge, so thanks to staff who were able to participate in putting this meeting together. Today we'll hear about two important issues, and then members will head over to the U of M to tour some programs. Since we have a lot to cover, we will get started. I will ask everyone to be concise with their testimony. And when I say thank you, that's kind of what I mean, but we're going to be moving on briskly. So first up, we have a presentation on aquaculture. We will be ending the presentation on this at 10:40. So we have to be firm on the time. Members, Representative Cleavorn introduced a bill calling for a state plan on aquaculture earlier this year. Since it was introduced late in the process, I committed to a hearing during the interim. This is an important topic and an opportunity. Today, we'll hear from a number of people working on the issue. We have just over an hour block for this segment. For those presenting, it's important, again, for everyone to stay within the time limits you provided so we can get through with everyone. Mr. Bischoff, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and begin your testimony. Clarence Bischoff, please. Is he with us?
Mr. Chair, he is okay. With us. He's perhaps muted.
Okay, here we go. Thank you.
Okay, my name is Clarence Bischoff. I'm president of the Minnesota Aquaculture Association. And on behalf of the association, I want to thank everyone for this opportunity to discuss aquaculture in Minnesota. The mission of the association is to promote the long-term sustainability and economic growth of aquaculture in Minnesota. The mission includes aquaponics, fisheries, and the bait industry. Our website provides links to detailed scientific and economic information. So I encourage everyone to take a look. A major goal of the association, as Chair Sundin just mentioned, is to support the creation of a Minnesota aquaculture plan. The plan will serve as a roadmap to the future of aquaculture in Minnesota. I believe this will bring major economic and social benefits to the state. And in relation to this goal, I want to give special thanks to Representative Jenny Clearborn, who was the author of House File 2391. The bill appropriates $100,000 to the Commissioner of Agriculture in the development of a comprehensive and well-documented state plan. We have a number of speakers here today. They're all ready to help achieve this goal. And I think we're ready to start the presentation with Don Schreiner of the Minnesota Seed Grant. Thank you.
Mr. Schreiner, would you please identify yourself for the record and proceed with your comments?
Good morning, and thanks for the opportunity to testify. My name is Don Schreiner, and I'm a fisheries and aquaculture specialist with Minnesota Sea Grant that's stationed up in Duluth, Minnesota. For those not familiar with Minnesota Sea Grant, we're a federal university partnership program that brings water science to communities. The Sea Grant Network is composed of 34 university-based programs along the coastal, ocean, and Great Lakes states. Sea Grant's mission is to enhance the use and conservation of coastal, marine, and Great Lakes resources in order to maintain a sustainable economy and environment. Sea Grant's part of NOAA, which falls under the Department of Commerce, and sustainable fisheries and aquaculture is one of four main focus areas with Sea Grant. Sea Grant is not an advocate for aquaculture, but we do fund and develop the science that answers important questions around the economic, social, and environmental concerns that surround aquaculture. Once that information is acquired, we work to transfer that science in an unbiased manner to interested stakeholders. Minnesota Sea Grant was asked by the Minnesota Aquaculture Association to discuss the need for a revised aquaculture plan for Minnesota, and we are not here on behalf of a request by the University of Minnesota. Aquaculture in Minnesota is composed of the bait industry, fish for stocking, and raising fish for food. Conservatively, it's about a $5 million industry, with about 50% of that allocated to the bait industry and 25% each to fish for stocking and food fish. In 2017, Minnesota Sea Grant hosted a two-day workshop that focused on food fish aquaculture with participants from the aquaculture industry, government, and academia. Participants identified one of the four major needs to be a revision of the 1989 Minnesota Aquaculture Plan. The first plan was basically a mandate from the legislature, and in 1988, the Minnesota Aquaculture Advisory Committee was formed and represented nine different state agencies. In 1989, a consultant was hired to write the plan with input and oversight from that advisory committee. That plan still stands today. It's very comprehensive, but unfortunately, it's very obsolete. In 2008, Minnesota DNR provided a policy update on the use of public wetlands for aquaculture, again, a request from the legislature. And in 2011, Minnesota DNR developed the best management practices for aquaculture, which included some of the new issues that have arisen, such as aquatic invasive species, water quality, climate change, effects on wild fish stocks, and other environmental issues. So why are we looking for a revised aquaculture plan now? Well, like I just mentioned, it's been 32 years since we had the last inclusive aquaculture plan that included a lot of agencies and various stakeholders. Food systems are evolving, and there's a real demand for locally grown food. Aquaculture is expanding rapidly on a worldwide basis, and especially in the United States. It is the fastest growing type of agriculture right now in the world. And food fish is one of the areas where a lot of attention is focused because of new technologies that have come forth within the last 10 years or so. The bait industry in Minnesota continues to be an issue. We don't have enough bait, and there is renewed interest in both Minnesota and across all the Great Lakes states. So if citizens and the legislators want to move forward with aquaculture in the state, we strongly believe a revised plan is necessary. What's the value of an aquaculture plan? Well, aquaculture, like everything these days, seems to be somewhat controversial. In my experience, there's two phases to plans and planning process. The first phase is the process that builds relationships. The process provides a forum for communication among various stakeholders and serves as an education component where folks can share their perspectives, their different values, their needs, their wants, and what they'd like to see for aquaculture in the state. The second phase is the plan itself that documents decision-making and agreements. What I found is that this work minimizes brush fires by dealing with the controversial issues up front, which I found legislators to be very appreciative of. The plan would address aquaculture impacts on public waters, natural fish stocks, and other environmental concerns, and balance that with the needs of the industry. The plan would document an understanding of how these decisions were made, and I really appreciate active plans that provide criteria where some predetermined action will occur, whether those criteria are met or not. Lastly, a plan serves as a guide or a roadmap on how aquaculture in the state will proceed for a given period of time, say 5, maybe 10 years. I'm happy to answer any questions or discuss more on what Minnesota Sea Grant is doing in aquaculture during the question and answer session, and I appreciate your attention. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Schreiner. We'll save the questions till our final moments here. So we can move on to Tony Vang with the Happy Fish Aquaponics. Mr. Vang, would you please identify yourself for the record and proceed with your input for the committee.
Thank you, Mr. My name is Tony Vang, and I'm a Hmong American, a veteran, and a lifelong Minnesotan. But today I'm here as a fish farmer. I started Happy Fish Aquaponics in 2014 and began producing both tilapia and fresh produce in 2017. With 4 greenhouses and 1 fish house, our family operated aquaponics farm supplied tilapia to local Asian markets and greens to local wholesalers who supplied restaurants throughout the Twin Cities. Unfortunately, due to COVID-19, we had to make the hard decision to shut down our aquaponics operation. I'm currently working with Barry Tholey and Minnesota Sea Grant on the LCCMR-funded research project of raising golden shiners. My part is to research the viability of golden shiners in aquaponic systems. The golden shiner is a very sought after bait fish in the ice fishing industry. And I'm sure I don't have to tell you about how important the fishing industry is to the state of Minnesota. Although Happy Fish Aquaponics may have shut down, I still believe that aquaponics is the future because of its ability to provide sustainable, healthy fish and produce produce that are pesticide and herbicide free. As a Minnesotan, I grew up fishing on many lakes and rivers. When Minnesotans think of eating fish, most of us think of eating the fish we harvest from our lakes and rivers. However, we, the Minnesota Aquaculture Association, would like to add locally farmed fish and other seafood as an alternative to all Minnesotans. Countries all over the world and in many other states, aquaculture is a thriving part of the economy, providing many jobs and revenue. It is our belief that Minnesota can also benefit from aquaculture if we support it. So today we're here to request that your committee consider providing the resources to produce a Minnesota aquaculture plan. We believe that an aquaculture plan will be the guiding foundation to promote both bay fish and food fish aquaculture. With a strong foundation, Minnesota aquaculture can grow to compete with other states. We seek your support of Minnesota aquaculture now and into the future. It is my hope that you will continue to learn more about aquaculture and its many benefits as our culture and economy. In closing, I'd like to thank you again for the opportunity to speak to you today. And if you should have any questions, feel free to ask. And if you should have time, you're all welcome to visit my little farm. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Vang. I would dearly enjoy a visit to your facility. At some point, maybe we can arrange that.
Definitely.
Love to see that. Thank you for your testimony. Next up, we have Mr. Michael Zeeble from True Shrimp. Please identify yourself for the record and continue with the testimony.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Michael Zabel. I have the privilege of being the president and CEO of the True Shrimp Company in Ballyton, Minnesota. If you've not heard of us, we are a shrimp aquaculture technology company growing shrimp indoors. We also will become producers of medical grade chitosan as well. In Battleton, Minnesota, we have one of the foremost shrimp laboratories in North America, as well as a significant pilot facility. I rise in favor of the support of this funding request, largely from the standpoint, as a member of the Minnesota Aquaculture Association, one of the missions is to educate the public as well as the public agencies about aquaculture. And I think this is a critical aspect. True Shrimp experienced firsthand what it was like to have a lack of understanding and coordination with the state agencies. And I think a big portion of the strategic plan that we hope to develop with your help would coordinate the efforts of the agencies, the university, in the development of aquaculture and to make them aware, have a greater understanding and a greater understanding of the opportunity that aquaculture presents. And it would mitigate the risks going forward if the agencies are informed and involved in the development of the strategic plan. For us, True Shrimp, we had a significant event in Luverne, Minnesota that turned out to be just simply a very difficult misunderstanding between the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency and the company, and it created difficulties that we someday will overcome and return back to Minnesota. So I would encourage you all to consider this funding and the development of the strategic plan, not for especially all the good reasons that Tony talked about and others, that aquaculture is part of the future. For us, shrimp is a 1.7 billion pound industry here in the United States, and in Minnesota has the resources to be a significant aquaculture player. We have the water, we have the feedstuffs, we certainly have people and the people with the intellect to develop this industry. I think that this strategic plan is the first step in seizing that opportunity and also seizing the opportunity for all of us to be coordinated in building this industry. I thank you for your time. Appreciate it.
Okay, but thank you, Mr. Zeeble. Next up, we have Barry Thule from Live Aqua. Please identify yourself for the record and go ahead with your testimony.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Barry Thule. I own and operate Lincoln Bait LLC in Staples, Minnesota, and I am the bait fish representative for Minnesota Aquaculture Association and to DNR through the Minnesota Aquaculture Association. Thank you for the opportunity to speak to the need for a proactive aquaculture association and the need for funding to establish and foster aquaculture and an updated aquaculture plan for Minnesota. I've been in the wholesale bait business in Minnesota for over 32 years and in aquaculture for over 25 of those years. I built a fish farm in Staples, Minnesota with 13 ponds, 3 raceway spawning systems, and 7,000 square feet of hydroponic greenhouses and 1 aquaponic research greenhouse dedicated to bait fish and locally grown food in central Minnesota. I also raise produce for the hospitals, school districts, and for local sales. I am currently working on an LCCMR-funded project directed at producing golden shiners, a well-known bait fish in Minnesota, in modified systems for aquaculture and aquaponics to address current bait fish shortages and the future needs in Minnesota. I speak from a different aspect of aquaculture, bait fish aquaculture, which is currently the most prevalent form of aquaculture practice in Minnesota, and reliant primarily on wild ponds throughout the state. Bait fish support the greater Minnesota tourism economy. Fishing and tourism go hand in hand in Minnesota, providing millions of dollars in revenue and thousands of jobs throughout the state. The presence of invasive species has severely limited the ability of the bait industry in Minnesota and will further limit access to resources the bait industry has depended upon for over 60 years to grow and harvest the bait fish Minnesota and tourist anglers use every day in Minnesota lakes and rivers. Drought, too, has greatly affected the amount of water available and the quantity of bait fish those waters can produce. Shortages of thousands of gallons and millions of bait fish are occurring now and will likely get worse without a plan of action and funding directed to support aquaculture in Minnesota and bait fish in particular from my perspective. Millions of dollars in revenues are lost due to bait fish shortages across the state. The answer is not importing bait fish from outside the state, but growing it here free of potential new invasive species and pathogens that could further limit our ability in the future. Land of 10,000 lakes should be able to produce enough bait fish for its own needs. I would ask for your assistance also to persuade the University of Minnesota to open more opportunities for extension experts for more directed research into aquaculture, new avenues to bring or to produce, and any number of aquaculture and aquaponic projects or products that will make Minnesota more sustainable, bringing more opportunities to and for small businesses and innovation that is now becoming a shrinking industry due to outside influences and invasive species. Through the AGREET agriculture research, education, and extension transfer programs authorized by the legislature, experts can be hired to assist in the transition into aquaculture of and for bait fish and support one of Minnesota's legacy industries to innovate into the 21st century. Thank you for your consideration and the opportunity to present today. I am open and available to discuss the needs and impending changes of future and the future of bait fish aquaculture holds in Minnesota. Thank you again.
Thank you, Mr. Tholey. I really do appreciate your comments today. You answered some of the questions I was about to raise, but now we can move on to one of my favorite legislators from the past, Karen Clark, with the Women's Environmental Institute, and Dean DeVolis with their comments. Representative Clark, please identify yourself for the record, and I welcome your comments.
Mr. Chair, I'm sorry to be the bearer of bad news, but your favorite former legislator is not on the call. So we'll just have to go to Mr. DeVolis.
Mr. DeVolis, please identify yourself for the record, and you've got plenty of time for testimony.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, thank you for the opportunity. My name is Dean DeVolis. I'm president of East Phillips Neighborhood Institute. Karen Clark also serves on the board with me, and so does Clarence Bischoff, our board members also. We at EPNI have endeavored to renovate a 230,000 square foot building in East Phillips neighborhood, which would contain multiple functions, which include hydroculture, aquaculture, urban farm, rural kitchen, affordable housing, and many other aspects as part of this project. The project would be community owned and operated, and I've been working with the BIPOC community East Phillips for quite some time putting this project together. It has been a pleasant discovery in working on this project that a lot of our minority communities have great interests in hydroculture and aquaculture, and actually bring their respective practices from our native countries. The East Africans have their methodology. Native Americans have developed their process. The Latina communities developed theirs. So my testimony is really centered around that aquaculture isn't just a rural initiative or a rural opportunity. It is also a very much of a true urban opportunity with all of various cultures that have come to Minnesota. So it's really served as a gateway for employment, startup businesses, and opportunity within these various communities where they're looking at urban areas, how they can contribute to the economy, and a lot of them have knowledge already in the aquaculture area. So what we're hoping the committee will do is, one, include the research analysis, not only the rural opportunities, but also the urban opportunities, because this could create a whole new generation of green jobs or a whole new generation of new Americans that come with it. Number two is provide the funding, because this will really start opening, for the same reasons, a urban renaissance in food production. And that's what we're starting to see across the country. And that's what we're starting to see here in Minneapolis and St. Paul. So not only do we support the rural economy, but really can create an opportunity for the urban economy and create a whole host of new jobs and industries that can serve our urban centers along with our rural counterparts on it. So I think this could be a really good win-win and a great opportunity. So I encourage the legislature to look at this hard and really look at the opportunity they'll bring to our urban areas in terms of one, increasing minority participation in business and providing the opportunity for growth in the aquaculture and hydroculture industry. So I thank you for your time and much appreciated. Karen, just so you know, she's not with us, so we taught the Women's Environmental Institute, I'll just sort of say, which has been a wonderful operation in encouraging hydroculture and aquaculture, similar to what I just discussed, for, and hence for women, for that opportunity, has been just a great advocate for it. So while I wish I could have her testimony here, I just want to say that she is very much in support of this bill and the opportunity it brings. And it really will be, this is approved, will really become a great asset for a lot more broad-based opportunity for many more Minnesotans. So I'll end my testimony and thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you so very much. I don't believe we've heard the last from Karen Clark on this issue and looking forward to more.
Mr. Chair. Thanks.
Yes, ma'am.
Mr. Chair, I'm sorry to interrupt, but Karen Clark has now joined the call.
Oh, okay. Well, former representative Karen Clark, who just shared some nice comments about you, and we'll give you an opportunity to introduce yourself and share your comments today. Karen Clark, go ahead, and you might be on mute. Can we unmute her?
I made the request. Maybe we could come back to her if she can get it figured out.
Certainly, if somebody text her or whatever, I'd really like to hear from her. So we'll put Karen on hold again and move on to Glenn Ford from Praxis. And we have Chad Hebert, and those are the names I have. Glenn Ford, will you please identify yourself and offer your testimony?
Hi, I'm Glenn Ford, and I'm with Praxis and End City Farms. And I am the CEO of the company, and very grateful to have the chance to speak to you today. There's not a whole lot more that I can add from what Tony mentioned earlier, just about aquaponics, but what I would like to say is that food is the number one employer in the world, and we have an opportunity with the kinds of operations that we are able to build and to build them in close proximity to urban areas, if not directly in those urban areas, and also in rural communities as well, so it picks up both. Our particular operation will employ 130 to 160 people, all above the wage levels that are being spoken about at $15 an hour. We are in excess of that. And this opportunity exists throughout Minnesota. We have one of these operations that has started to be constructed in Pennsylvania. We are also wanting to build this operation in Minnesota because we are Minnesotans. We believe that with the collaborative actions that we could have with all of the people that you have on this call, that not only can we build these businesses, but quite frankly, that we can make Minnesota one of the strongest centers for both indoor farming as well as aquaculture. And we are quite interested in doing that. We could use some assistance and tie in further with USDA to approve some of these projects and to bring incentives to it. That would be my big ask of you. USDA seems to take somewhat of a regional approach to this. And so having a concise message coming out of Minnesota would be quite helpful to all of us that want to build these projects out. These are quite clean projects, by the way. So we don't foul water in an aquaponics project. We actually filter the water. So there are not a lot of environmental issues that would be a concern to the state. So this is really a wonderful opportunity for us to have a master plan that we would all grow from. And I applaud all of the people on the call and what we are capable of doing.
Thank you so very much. Is there Chad Hebert? I see his name listed here.
He's not able to join us today.
Okay, well, thank you. Okay, we're streaming right along then. Do we have Karen Clark available now?
Mr. Chair, she just tried to re-log on, so perhaps this will be the time.
He's on mute. Karen Clark is on mute, it's indicated. There we go. Welcome, Karen Clark, to the committee. Please identify yourself, and we're anxiously awaiting your testimony.
Thank you, Chair Sundin, and thank you, others. I'm sorry, I guess I must have had some technical difficulties getting in, but I have heard everything up to this point, and let me just say, it's great to see you all again. It's been almost 3 years since I've retired, and I'm happy to be here to talk with you as part of the aquaculture community. I work with the Women's Environmental Institute in my spare time, and one of the things that we have done over the years is create an aquaculture system that is what I would call homegrown. We make it affordable to small farmers and families who want to grow fish, good clean fish in their homes or in the garages, community centers, and so on. And part of this is so important to me because the fish that we are growing in aquaculture is really clean fish. It doesn't have any of the contaminants that we unfortunately have when we go fishing in our lakes and streams. And it's especially important to me as a person who represented urban community to be able to see this opportunity in our cities and available to people who live there. And that, I think, was referenced earlier about making accessible clean fish protein to low-income people, to people of color and Native people in ways that right now is a very small scale. So I'm supporting the plan to try to develop this industry. We have a huge deficit to overcome with imported fish, and we can do a lot of it with the small family-run aquaculture aquaponics systems. As was mentioned earlier by some of the speakers, what we do at the Women's Environmental Institute is a closed loop system with vegetables and fish. And we use soil as our base of growing our vegetables. It makes it very sustainable. It's a unique part of the system in Minnesota. I won't take a whole lot more time. Glad to answer some questions. We teach people how to do this kind of aquaponics at the Women's Environmental Institute. It's a 8 or 9 month course that Chad Hebert, who is one of the folks who's been a leading producer in our state, teaches for us. And again, I'd be glad to answer questions. Well, we believe this is an affordable, sustainable addition to our many years of being a state known for our high quality fish. And so I would be glad to answer any questions as we go forward. I know my time is short. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Karen Clark. This is a pleasure hearing from you. We will have time for questions here in a little bit. Right now we have Jessica Colburn from the Blue Water Farms, or maybe Ed and Chandos Lee as well. So Jessica Colburn, go ahead. Your testimony.
Thank you. Ed Annis Hansley won't be able to join us today, but thank you for hearing my testimony in support of the statewide aquaculture plan. I am Jessica Coburn, a resident of St. Paul and mother of three, and a scientist with a background in environmental science, planning, and agronomy. Today, I am representing as part of Blue Water Farms in Welsh, Minnesota. Blue Water Farms is a high-tech startup intending to raise 1,000 tons of walleye a year, just disrupting the long trade reliance we've had on Canadian walleye and expanding the market by offering consumers a local, gluten-free, reliable option. Our business represents a mid-sized recirculating aquaculture farm that, if realized, will bring in approximately $10 million in revenue to the state each year and contributing to the state's economy. Our business is built on a mission to support a more sustainable food system achieved through protein production with less land, fewer harmful inputs to our natural systems, and support a resilient food system. We have already appreciated the state support through the MDA and DEEP grants to support beginning farms and businesses, as well as support from advisory services such as AURI. However, other mid-size and large aquaculture businesses have struggled to achieve success here, and we believe that to achieve the food system success we need in Minnesota, the state needs to take an active role in planning and supporting and working with the aquaculture industry to establish an acceptance and an understanding of the business within the entire chain of custody, from growing the feed resources all the way to distribution and making it to the grocery stores web these days. I support the funding of an aquaculture plan and establishment of aquaculture around the state, because I understand that aquaculture is a path to not only a more resilient food system, but also to rural and urban job choices and reconnection to our food system. Thank you for this opportunity to address the committee.
Well, thank you, Jessica Kerber, and I appreciate your testimony. Next up, we have Constance Carlson from UMN Extension. It's a Rural Sustainable Development Partnership, Forever Green Initiatives. Please go ahead with your, identify yourself and go ahead with your testimony, Constance Carlson.
Thank you, Chair Sandine and members of the House Ag Committee. My name is Constance Carlson. I'm the co-director of the statewide sustainable ag and food systems for the University of Minnesota Extension's program called the Regional Sustainable Development Partnerships, or RSDP. In my role with RSDP, I'm charged with supporting the commercialization of the new crops and cropping systems in development through the Forever Green Initiative. Thank you for the opportunity to come before you as a representative of Forever Green and to convey our support for the funding and establishment of an aquaculture plan in Minnesota. The Forever Green Initiative is a research platform developing new crops and cropping systems that keep our soils in continuous living cover, build soil health, protect our water resources, drive new economic opportunities, and foster social well-being through community engagement and leadership across Minnesota. The portfolio of crops in this initiative includes Kernza, which is the first perennial grain available for commercial production in the United States, hybrid hazelnuts, perennial flax, winter barley, alfalfa, and new winter hardy oil seeds that include winter camelina and pennycress. The last three crops in this list, alfalfa, winter camelina, and domesticated pennycress, have already been identified as potential high protein, high omega-3, essential fatty acid feed sources for aquaculture production. Camelina oil and meal in particular have extensive published research on its benefits as an aquafeed. Research is showing that fish that consume a diet with camelina produce the same nutritional benefits as fish that eat a diet containing fish oil. And there are indications that camelina oil may be a superior fat source for fish in comparison to other well-known plant oils. Camelina meal, the byproduct of crushing camelina oil, has also been shown to be a potential source for aquafeed. A pilot project led by the Forever Green researchers in partnership with industry and innovative growers is currently underway to scale production of winter camelina to both protect our soil and water resources and also provide abundant supply of winter camelina for product research, development, and implementation. To ensure the ongoing success and adoption of these new innovative and sustainable crops, we need industry partners willing to walk along with us, researching and developing end uses to drive market demand for these new crops. The Minnesota Aquaculture Association is exactly that partner. They are a coalition of people and organizations committed to developing a thriving and sustainable aquaculture industry in Minnesota. They understand that a key part of the equation of sustainable aquaculture includes sourcing aquafeed from sustainable sources. Sources that not only protect our soils and water, but build value and well-being in Minnesota communities. They have been vocal about supporting the new crops in the Forever Green Initiative and recognize that a partnership that builds strong connections between Minnesota crop agriculture and Minnesota aquaculture is a model for resiliency, innovation, and sustainability. At Forever Green, we recognize that a thriving aquaculture industry in Minnesota will spur an economic ripple effect that will benefit farmers, businesses, and citizens. We strongly encourage you to give every consideration to allocating $100,000 to fund the development of a statewide plan for aquaculture that will be informed by input and participation of key state agencies, universities, and other stakeholders. A Minnesota aquaculture plan will provide a platform or a roadmap for sharing of information to support the growth of a new industry, drive new economic opportunities for Minnesota farmers and businesses, and spur sustainable innovation. Thank you very much for your time and consideration.
Thank you, Constance Carlson, for your testimony. Next up, we have Harold Stanislawski from AURI, a very noble organization with a terrific board of directors. Mr. Stanislawski, would you please identify yourself for the record and continue with testimony?
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, my name is Harold Stanislawski. I'm Business Development Director for the Agricultural Utilization Research Institute, often known as AURI. AURI's mission is to foster long-term economic development for the state through value-added agricultural products. AURI is about to release its aquaculture report entitled Minnesota Aquaculture, Challenges and Opportunities. This report outlines many of the elements an aquaculture industry in our state will need to address. The report also identified several significant hurdles. These include pairing species with effective productive systems, developing disease management protocols, identifying cost-effective fish meal alternatives, navigating complex and changing regulatory systems, and having access to meaningful consumer market and value-added research, obtaining investment capital and or debt financing, and establishing economically viable operations. AURI is engaged with the aquaculture industry by finding value-added markets for locally raised fish and valorizing seafood waste, such as using it for high-value organic fertilizer, innovative fish food products, and other future high-value opportunities. Aquaculture also offers opportunities to utilize byproducts from biofuel production, like soy meal and distillers' dried grains for fish feed, industrial heat and hot water for indoor aquaculture, as well as aquaponics production. Thus, aquaculture can support and contribute to the state's entrepreneurial, rural, and innovative agricultural economy. AURI looks forward to assisting Minnesota businesses with this kind of development, which we believe will see meaningful growth. AURI supports and is an advocate for the efforts of the Minnesota Aquaculture Association to develop an aquacultural strategic plan that will guide and support the industry in the years ahead in concert with our state regulatory partners. Input from stakeholders represented here today and others who will provide best practices for the plan is crucial to having an industry that can grow, innovate, understand regulations, be in step with the marketplace and the consumer, and attract investment into this industry in the land of 10,000 lakes. Thank you for the opportunity to address the committee, and we look forward to answering questions.
Okay, well, thank you, Mr. Stanislawski. I appreciate your testimony today. And this opens it up for an ample amount of time for questions and comments. But before we run off with that, I'd like to thank Representative Cleavorn for bringing this issue up and getting it front and center in front of the committee. It's much appreciated. It's very interesting. And thanks to former Representative Karen Clark for and all the testifiers today for their brevity and input today. So we can move on to questions. You get your raise hand option on your laptops there. So if we'll take them hopefully in an order that they come. So if you've got comments or questions, please raise your hand. Now we're running way ahead of schedule. Representative Lewick, please.
Just a question. Is there anybody on from the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources? Are they involved in this hearing at all? You know, Mr. Chair?
Not that I know of. Mr. Bischoff, can you comment if there's been communications with the DNR?
Yes, we've had contact with Sean Sisler, and I see on the screen here that his supervisor, Shannon Fisher, has joined us. So I would like to provide an opportunity for him to comment.
Shannon Fisher, do you have any comments that would help the committee?
Thank you for the opportunity. This is Shannon Fisher. I'm the Populations Regulations Manager at for the Section of Fisheries with DNR. I know Sean Sisler has, as Mr. Bischoff said, has been involved in this project. I'm sitting in for him today because he is on vacation. You know, the comments that I would have is that, you know, in general, we are very supportive of what, you know, I think the intent is of this plan. There were a number of comments today that I can certainly throw my support behind, such as Barry's comment about working on this to avoid the importation of bait fish, the vector that potentially is caused by bait fish importation with additional invasive species issues and pathogens is a significant potential issue. You know, we also want to make sure we have a robust bait availability. It is obviously very critical for the continuation of the recreational fishery in Minnesota. So I think the general intent here is good. I think we can, you know, we look forward to continuing to work with you on this. And of course, we want to do so in a manner that is going to protect our wild fish stocks from potential disease and pathogen issues. And I think we can get ahead of this. So thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Representative Anderson, please.
Thank you, Mr. I don't know if Representative Lewick was done with his questioning yet, but he does raise an interesting point. And I want to thank Representative Cleavorn for offering to venture into this area. We do need to look at this. Over the past couple of years, I've had some issues mainly with bait, people that work in the bait industry. And our current statutes really make a separation between fish raised for food and fish raised for bait. There are tax issues, things like that, that those that are in the business of raising bait fish are taxed on a commercial rate, whereas if you raise the food, fish for food, get some agriculture rate. So I think we need to look at that, and I support moving ahead and coming up with a new plan. A little bit surprised that we're including the bait folks in with the food folks, because currently they are distinctly separate according to our current statute. So moving ahead, if we can make some changes there to include the bait fish folks, more of an agriculture type industry, I would wholeheartedly support that. So those are my comments, Mr. Chair, and thank you.
Thank you very much, Representative Anderson. Chair Hansen, questions, comments?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and fascinating presentations. A couple things, I think, on the environmental side, and then a long-term question. One is, as the DNR mentioned, the pathogen, potential pathogen exposure with movement of pathogens through water. The bait fish challenge is a clear problem. You know, and we did fund the Golden Shiner study that was referenced a couple times through LCCMR. So looking forward to those results. I think on the saltwater species, the concern there is the discharge. You know, what do we're not a coastal state on the ocean. So what happens with recycling and discharge on saltwater? So on the freshwater species, the pathogen load and trying to prevent cross-contamination with the native fish and wildlife. And then the saltwater is a PCA question, I think. And then looking ahead as industries expand, having some type of rule or procedure for closure. You know, as we've gone through COVID in the last couple of years and businesses fail, we want to make sure that the public doesn't get stuck. Not that the businesses will fail, but in case they do, how do we make sure that there are cleanup funds available for a site so the public is not responsible for cleaning up when a business fails or whether and where there may be an environmental hazard. So that's something we've got to look at on the long run when there's permitting, not just the construction and the development, but how do we deal with closure when there's an accident, a business failure, or the facilities reach their natural end of life cycle.
So plenty of questions there. Would anybody like to respond to Chair Hansen's concerns?
Well, if I would like to, Mr. Chairman, again, Michael Zabel. I'll speak from the marine saltwater side, Representative Hansen. That was at the heart of our unfortunate misunderstanding with Minnesota Pollution Control. Speaking for True Shrimp, and I think for other shrimp farmers I know in Minnesota, we don't discharge the salt water. We recycle it. We clean it, reclaim it, and reuse it. It's the last thing we would want to do is discharge it because we have a lot of money invested in it. And that was the heart of the misunderstanding that I think had there been greater coordination with the agencies. It didn't come to light until after the Laverne event when Acting Commissioner Bishop actually came to Ballatin. And for the first time, the NPCA took some interest in exactly what we were doing to find out that that was the case and that it was all a terrible misunderstanding. So, let's speak to that.
Thank you. Any follow-up, Chair Hansen? Hearing none.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, just to, you know, I think accidents do happen and the potential for discharge and trying to have the redundancy for environmental protection in place and this issue of closure that we need to look at. So just something, maybe that's something the report can address and as we're looking into the future.
Thank you. Representative Lippert, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this is a question I'll direct to Mr. Stanislavski of AURI, but perhaps others might have some thoughts too. So my question is related to algae. There's been growing interest in the use of algae as an additive for cattle feed to reduce methane emissions. And it seems like that could be synergistic with the aquaculture industry. I don't know if there are possibilities there, but I wonder if there's anyone thinking about that, if there's anything related to that possibility in AURI's aquaculture report that's coming out soon.
Mr. Stanislavski, please.
Yes, that's a very good question. AURI has a PhD microbiologist on staff, and in fact, we are working with a client right now in Minnesota on proper algae production for the baby shrimp. That's what they need in their early life to survive. So we are doing that right now. We have a very nice project moving forward with this particular client and developing all the protocols and procedures to move forward with that. And it's just another sector, if you will, of this whole big aquaculture picture of what is necessary to have a viable aquaculture industry. So we are doing that, and things are going very well at this particular location. And we hope to be publishing some information about that in the future.
Any other questions for the testifiers or the author of this bill?
Chair Sundin, Representative Thompson has his hand up.
Representative Thompson, please.
Thank you so much. Real quick, I'm always amazed at what I learn from you guys here. And this is a very, very, very beautiful presentation. I get to see Karen Clark also. It's pretty cool. His name is Dean DeVos. We talked about gateways to jobs for communities of color. I just wanted to see if he would elaborate on what type of jobs and top type of opportunities for education with this particular aquaculture project.
Mr. DeVos. You are muted.
My apologies. Thank you. Dean DeVos, there's a whole host of varieties, and you miss Chad Huber. So I use his for his example at Little Earth, which is a Native American community in East Phillips. Chad has developed a youth farm system in which he's taken the children, teaching them aquaponics and hydroponics, and educating them on the system. These children now want to be involved in industry. So they're actually looking to be involved in aquaponics and hydroponics through a youth mentorship program that Chad established. That is a fascinating program, actually was assisted by Deed on original grant that Karen put together 3-4 years ago on that process. So that is a gateway just in youth development in the Little Earth that's being well-developed and actively encouraged youth. So that's one avenue. Another avenue is a lot of the ethnic businesses along Lake Street were growing their own fish stocks, things like that. Some of those got lost. A lot of the cultural businesses, the Latinx community, were developed by growing in the basement and elsewhere, trying to supply the culture public foods for what they're serving the restaurants. So the idea is that they want to move it to a central facility where they can grow and develop. So that's another avenue that's very real. The East African community has established in history of the very, especially the coastal countries, bringing their culture, bringing their aspect on it. So part of it's coming from the various cultural based communities that are bringing an opportunity, the same with the Hmong and so forth in terms of their industry. And then the other opportunity is just the related jobs that come with it, because what's happening in the urban market with transportation costs, with gas going up, and you're seeing what's happening in supply chains being fractured, the urban market is very interested in developing their own near at home source for these supplies, because their main consumer is the major cities. And so you're starting to see a whole host of job opportunities come from the various, what they're bringing from the various native countries, but also what's being developed within our area. So that is a big process occurring. And that's why EP&I has been really shepherding this with Karen Clark and Clarence Bishop board members and others as part of this group of developing an industry, because there's a huge amount of opportunity in the urban areas, in food production, in aquaponics, and the interest is already there. So it's not something we had to create when we were working on the East Phillips Urban Farm. They showed up and said, we want to be part of this. We understand this. We're welcome to it. So we're unlocking a great opportunity with this project working on, and this bill for funding will enhance that. And I just hope that's incorporated, because this could really start to revolutionize urban areas and create the opportunity of employment and small business production that you heard in the testimony that really enhance everyone's chance to be part of the U.S. economy.
Is there a follow-up, Representative Thompson?
No, Chair. I just want to say thank you for what's happening in the East Phillips community. I think that if our youth can see it, they can be it. And so I just want to say thank you for your presentation.
No, thank you for allowing us to speak.
Thank you. Representative Jenny Cleburn, please.
Thank you, Chair Sundin. This has been a really great conversation. And I just want to bring us back to where we started this morning. This legislation is about creating a plan. And I really liked how Mr. Schreiner talked about this is phases, right? It's the beginning salvo for a conversation. It's a then about moving and building those relationships, making sure that we're taking all the pieces that we heard this morning, the economic opportunities, the educational opportunities, while we protect and preserve our environment and our natural resources. All of these things are very important, and that's why bringing our agricultural agencies into play here to help us look at the broad picture to develop an aquaculture plan is so critical. I love Representative Karen Clark talking about this being clean and sustainable and bringing in large farmers and small farmers and making sure that we have women involved and being able to feed their families in a clean and wholesome way. It is a big picture project that we're talking about, and it's not something that happens with just, oh yeah, this sounds like a good idea. These conversations are really important, but just to ground us in some of the things that we heard this morning, it's both large and small, it's urban and rural, it's existing agriculture combining with emerging agriculture, it's culturally diverse, it's clean, it's sustainable. There are many good opportunities here, but we have to be smart, we have to be strategic. This conversation this morning is to get us kind of grounded on the same page as we work forward to trying to pass this legislation in the next session. And Chair Sundin, I thank you for this opportunity to give us all space to talk and hear each other. And I'll look forward to a full hearing in the next session. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Representative Cleburn. It's going to be one of the more interesting topics that we will be addressing going forward. Come February, I guess. Looking forward to it very, very much. We're running a little bit ahead of schedule, which doesn't happen all the time. And we'll be talking about the weather here very shortly. But earlier, before we started the committee meeting, we had comments from Representative Anderson regarding in the insurance issue for drought relief. Now that we are in session and on the record here, I'll give Representative Anderson opportunity to again identify yourself and introduce this important issue that we'll be talking about in just a few minutes.
Again, thank you, Chair Sundin. As I mentioned earlier before the meeting started, our primary focus, I think, in providing some drought relief for farmers is those that have livestock. It's been an expense for them to find feed if they've been able to keep all of their livestock on the farm. Some have had to sell off some of their herds to match their supply of feed. That's our top priority. But thinking of ways to help other farmers as well, came up with the idea of helping them with their crop insurance premiums. Our state, most of the state has been labeled in a D2 or D3 status of drought. And that, of course, is from USDA, the Drought Monitor Index that comes out every week. And I think most farmers have crop insurance, and thankfully so this year. But what this bill would do, we kind of took this from what we did under Chair Poppe a couple of years back in regard to providing some assistance for dairymen to enroll in the livestock margin protection plan and help them with their premiums somewhat. And this would do a similar thing in that it would pay up to one half for a maximum of $1,000 per farm to help them with the cost of their crop insurance this year when most, I would say most farmers are seeing sub average yields of their crops, corn, soybeans, other crops as well, wheat, things like that. And what this legislation would do would provide a bit of help for farmers in paying their crop insurance premium. And with that, Mr. Chair, I thank you for the opportunity. And we'll see. I don't have any numbers yet as to how many would be affected, how much this would cost, but an idea going forward to give some assistance to farmers and, as they try to weather the storm this year with the drought situation. Thanks, Mr. Chair.
Thank you for that prelude for session here. Representative Cleburne, do you still have your hand up? Do you have further comments?
I do, Chair Sundin. And this is just to Representative Anderson. I want to make sure that we're being creative and we're surveying all of our farmers. So those small farmers who maybe didn't have crop insurance, I'm just curious, and you don't have to answer the question today, but when we talk about this in committee later, I'd really like for us to think broadly about how we serve those very small farmers as well. What would that look like? What would be fair? And we can have a more robust conversation in committee later, but something we need to think about as well. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Hansen.
I think it's real important that if we're providing aid, that we provide aid to people who need it. We just went through a process with deed for businesses, and farming is a business. And those businesses, we had businesses in Minneapolis who got burned out that had to wait a year for applying for aid, and they still have no guarantee of being made whole. So I think when we're looking at aid to certain businesses, we should use the same standards as we do for other businesses. And that means demonstrating a loss. I have no desire in providing premium relief for people who are making a lot of money. I don't want to enhance their profit. And we need to remember that crop prices are very high right now, and not everybody is suffering. So I think it's not too hard to ask to demonstrate that you've had a loss. I think there is, my understanding of growing up on a farm is people were very reluctant to ask for aid, but we've had a massive amount of federal aid come in, and crop insurance is heavily subsidized by the public. So I don't think it's too much asked to demonstrate need if the state is being asked to provide public funds. And that we should look at other businesses. I'm just thinking, I see on the picture here the aquaculture guy who had to stop growing tilapia. Should we pay his insurance premiums? Should we pay the insurance premiums of the businesses that were burned out in Minneapolis? I think those are questions when we're asking about fairness and what logically we can do to help people who need help.
Thank you very much, Chair Hansen. Okay, your hand is still up. I just assumed you're done. Thank you very much. Good discussion. And, I'm glad we tucked that other issue in here to kind of crack the shell on this issue as well. So just a reminder here, members, you know, let's talk about the weather a little bit. We've had rain recently, and some of the areas have been affected. That's terrific. But I thought it was important to ask the department to brief the committee on the situation and what is being done to help farmers and communities in need. We have about an hour for this discussion. We have with us, firstly, Commissioner Peterson. Welcome to the committee, and thank you in advance for your comments. Commissioner Peterson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. My name is Tom Peterson. I serve as Commissioner of Agriculture for the Department of Agriculture. And happy National Farmers Day, and great to be with you to talk about drought. And I don't know if Nancy is going to put our PowerPoint up. I have a Deputy Commissioner Vobel, too, who is going to share walking through this with me. And we'll go through these really quickly. But just really important to talk about our drought. It's one of the, okay, that's good. We can go to the next slide. So Minnesota has been experiencing one of the worst droughts in decades. I think a lot of people, when we think back to 1988. This is probably about the worst drought since then, is what most farmers have told us, and definitely have traveled the state. In mid-August, nearly 90% of Minnesota was under a severe drought conditions. Northern Minnesota, especially up in Representative Burkle's area, was hit the worst, where a swath of the state was under exceptional drought. Next slide. And here you can kind of see the drought monitor. I think Representative Anderson was referencing. This comes out every Thursday morning, something we look at really closely. And you can see on the left, hopefully it's your left, this last week, October 5th, last one. We'll see another one here on Thursday morning. But you can still see the red up there in northern Minnesota and the yellow. So 17 counties, 17% of the state still in that D3 drought, which is really a pretty bad situation. And quite a bit of the state is still in the D2 severe drought. That's 25 counties in that severe drought, and 17 in the extreme drought. And so when you look over at August 17th was the worst we had it, and that was where the D3 really extended down into southern Minnesota. It really was quite, quite expansive. I'd also say on these drought monitors, they're pretty accurate, but, you know, I'd say even Mr. Chairman, in your area, we saw some really bad areas. I saw some that look like with D3 or D4, but they were categorized as D2. And so just wanted to highlight that. You can see the D4, which is the highest, where at one point we had 10% of Minnesota in that for several weeks. Next slide, please. Just as harvest has commenced across the state, of course, farmers are seeing lower yields, lower crop quality due to drought. We also, talking about fruit and vegetable, other specialty crop growers have also seen losses. We talked, I think I probably have been to about 15 farmers markets this summer, and many of you have too, and you'll talk to those farmers who maybe weren't able to grow a certain kind of crop or a squash or something in different parts of the state because they just couldn't reach maturity. And of course, trees and other things are under stress, and we can see more pests too at that point as well sometimes. Next slide, please. And this wanted to talk a little bit as we get into a state program. The federal government does provide different pieces, as Representative Anderson was talking about. By and large, our crop farmers have a good, strong safety net in crop insurance. And livestock is something else where we don't have as strong of that safety net, or for our specialty crop growers. And so this is just a snapshot of some of the programs. And keep in mind, some of these programs, the federal government at times can take a long time to pay back. So for example, some farmers are getting paid in 2021 for the extreme rain events that we had in 2019. And so one of the ideas, if the state steps in and helps a little bit, we can move a lot quicker. And so there are some programs that do help livestock through, like, the livestock forage program, the ELAP program, emergency livestock program, but farmers sometimes is just not as helpful. And then for our specialty crop growers, it is also not as helpful. One of the things on crop insurance, they did just put out a new product here this week for some specialty crop growers. So interesting on how we get some of those farmers to enroll their program and trying to help them get covered by crop insurance is interesting on that specialty crop program. But again, it just doesn't cover like the main crops that we have. And so we work with a lot of these partners. The other problem with the federal government is funding these programs. Some of them are not funded, and we can talk about that in a little bit. Next slide, please. Wanted to just talk too about the state response to the drought. The DNR is going to be on here in a little bit, but we talked about some of the things that we could do. About 3 months ago, I started convening calls every other Friday that included legislators, our congressional delegation, the USDA, the Bowser DNR, and farmers from across the state, farm groups that were interested. We have one this coming Friday. I'm not sure how much longer we'll continue them. They've been really good to share ideas, and some of these ideas that we have here came out of that. So we really worked, the DNR worked to open state state lands where it made sense, were managed. And I want to really, you know, overstate this, but it's managed haying and grazing. They have to have a plan that they go in there. They work with the Department of Ag and the DNR to have a managed plan to, and that's healthy for a lot of that land too that the DNR owns. And so Bowser also was able to work with over 100 farmers to do some grazing and haying on rim easements too, which was very helpful to a lot of those farmers. Some of those farmers that can represent Anderson's district would tell me that they got hay for several months, would help them. Governor Walz has also issued three executive orders to provide hours of service relief for truckers transporting livestock, water, and hay to impacted farmers. In many parts of the state, hay is moving all over the state, but finding a trucker is very difficult right now. And so for some of these farmers, this has been very helpful. And also livestock. We had record amounts of livestock moving through our sale barns. I stopped at the sale barns in Motley and Bagley, and you know the some of those sale barns would be so full that the cattle would have to stay on the trucks, and that was a real concern. And so those hours of service exemptions were really helpful. We currently have one. We're going to evaluate at the end of the month if we're going to continue with it. We also had the State Drought Task Force, which was led by the DNR, that was convened when we were in that D4 area and is on pause right now. So that's another piece that we worked on. Next slide, please. Other responses that we've had to drought is we've been providing drought resources through the Department of Ag website and an email MDA response. We do get calls from farmers and people that are looking for hay. The number one thing we have on our website is I think we have 12 different sites where people can find hay. And that's, you know, sometimes just thinking about that. The Dakotas, for example, they have their own hay exchange. I don't know that that's totally needed because there's so many Facebook groups that people can join. We also included Wisconsin groups. And by and large, farmers I've been talking with have been able to find that, but that's been helpful. I mentioned the local, the calls that we do, and then we've traveled the state. I've had the governor out on several farms. We had USDA Secretary Vilsack on the Hoffa farm to talk to those smaller specialty crop producers too as well. We've relayed a lot of information to our federal partners and other state agencies. And also continue and thank you to the legislators for providing help for our farm advocates and our farm and rural helpline. It's a very stressful situation for a lot of our farmers. Next slide, please. And also in July, the Rural Finance Authority, who this committee has worked with a lot, we authorized zero interest loans to be made available for farmers who are suffering from lack of rain. And this will be part of our proposal we'll put forward in a little bit. This loan program is very important for farmers who are not insured or underinsured. Not all farmers carry crop insurance. Farmers have a lot of interest in this. The program can be used for numerous items. The most important is replacement of feed, livestock, and poultry. That's where we have the most interest. We have written the first loan. We have a couple that are in the queue, but we've had a lot of calls. People are kind of waiting to see what harvest looks like. And we are concerned that because of the dollar amount we have in this, we're going to need some extra help. Next slide, please. And just to remind you that we have emergency response. We have an Office of Emergency Preparedness and Response, and also working with multi-state agencies, and that we continue to work through this awareness that this is, you know, throughout the agency, there's a lot of different things that come on with drought, but also within the administration. Next slide. And I don't have to tell a lot of you this, but, you know, a lot of farmers have just been saying, you know, they've had to reduce their size of their herd. They've had to Just haven't seen anything like this. You know, I travel the state quite extensively, and I think when I stopped at the sale barns in Bagley and others to hear farmers that are selling out, selling those cattle herds. And again, the livestock that we're helping, these are cow-calf farmers. These aren't large feedlots or anything like this. This is farmers that utilize hay and grazing. And you know, what the one farmer told me that kind of stuck is that if I'm not gonna, you know, need hay and hay ground, I'm gonna rent it to the local row crop farmer and we'll put it in row crops. And we need hay ground across the state. We need cattle on those smaller herds, especially in the northern part of the state. Next slide, please. And so I'm gonna turn it over to Deputy Commissioner Vobel to walk through our package quick. The one thing I just kind of say on this is that as we kind of listened and talked to people around the state, we felt like we wanted to put something out there, and this is what we felt like could be helpful. I think this program is scalable. We're going to put some numbers in here, but we could go up, we could go down, we could increase the limits, lower the limits, we could increase and add things to it. You know, we're open to suggestions. We think that the state has some dollars right now, and that it would be wise to invest to help some of these farmers make it through the winter, pay a bill or two to get through the winter. We saw this with the dairy program. It was very helpful to those farmers. And so I'll turn it over to Deputy Commissioner Vobel to continue with the next slide.
Thank you very much, Commissioner Peterson. Commissioner Vobel, would you proceed?
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Andrea Vobel. I serve as Deputy Commissioner at the Minnesota Department of Agriculture. Thank you so much for having me today. So we can go to the next slide. I'll just dive right into the specifics. So similar to what we did with the livestock producers impacted, not just livestock producers, but processors, I'm sorry, during COVID-19, we did some rapid response grants that went over very well. So that's what we modeled this after. It's a $10 million package, specifically for livestock producers and specialty crop growers, as Tom had alluded to earlier. It's really two buckets, so $5 million in rapid response grants to provide drought relief for livestock producers and specialty crop producers, and then $5 million for the Rural Finance Authority's Disaster Recovery Loan Program. Many of you are familiar with the RFA and have been very supportive in the past. This particular loan program within the RFA makes zero interest loans available immediately for farmers whose operations are suffering from lack of rain. Next slide. So for the rapid response grants, as I said, it's very similar to the grants we did for livestock processors during COVID. So they would be, we would propose non-competitive grants awarded on a first come first serve basis. So there would be two separate programs within this bucket for livestock producers and specialty crop producers. For a maximum grant award, we have we can go up to $5,000. We can also go a little bit higher if we have explicit legislative authority to do that. And it would be matched one-to-one by the producer. The eligibility period is under consideration. So we understand that there are some folks who have maybe had some issues starting from what they bought back in January. We could do it from July up into the next following year. So we're very open to that, that possibility. But again, that's under consideration. Next slide. So when we crunch the numbers, the number of producers who could receive a grant if they all applied for either the livestock or the specialty crop grant at the maximum amount, if we did 5,000, it'd be about 932 producers, and at 10,000, it'd be about 466. It would likely be a higher number because not all producers would request the maximum amount. We saw that in some of the other rapid response grants we've done. They don't necessarily need the max amount that we would be offering. Between the two programs, we'd initially set aside $1 million for each and then shift the rest of the remaining money between the programs to match the demand. We're not quite sure which ones we would get more for, and so we want to be able to be flexible. And if either program has less than $1 million in applications, as we near the application deadlines, we would shift the unused money to the other program. We would allow producers to apply for one or both grants and receive up to the maximum amount for each program, as we understand some are livestock and specialty crop producers. And also an important piece is we would want to use funds to be used to contract with organizations that serve beginning and emerging farmers so that they could help perform outreach and assist with the application and reimbursement process. Next slide. For livestock producers, we would make them available to producers of all livestock species. We'd focus on grazing animals, including beef, dairy, goats, sheep, bison, and horses. These are examples of eligible costs. As the commissioner mentioned, we are very open to a lot of different ideas. These are just examples of possible eligible costs that could be part of the program. I won't go through all of them, but a lot on water hauling, water handling, wells, livestock pond dredging, cover crop pasture, forage seed and technical assistance, fencing supplies, feed storage, and feed transportation. Next slide. For specialty crop producers, they'd be available to specialty crop producers such as fruits, vegetables, and nursery crops. Again, examples of eligible costs for this, this program would be water handling equipment, water containment equipment, wells and well testing, water conservation, technical assistance, mulch and straw, seeds and transplants, including cover crops, and irrigation equipment, including drip irrigation. Next slide. For the next $5 million pots, currently there's about $3.5 million in the RFA's revolving loan account that we can be used for seven different types of loan programs. So we've issued about $2.1 million in disaster recovery loans over the last two fiscal years. Since the RFA board opened up the disaster recovery loan program to drought relief, we've received about 40 inquiries from producers around the state. We understand that the $3.5 million probably won't cover the number of inquiries we're getting and that we anticipate getting in the near future. If we could also change some of the eligibility requirements that are listed within the disaster recovery loan statute, if we could further expand the eligibility, we could also make more loans available to emerging, beginning, young, and small farm operators. We would suggest maybe specifically there's a requirement for that folks would have to receive at least 50% of their average annual gross income from farming for the past 3 years. We'd propose reducing that to 20% and removing the three-year requirement. And we think an additional $5 million would cover more than enough for the disaster recovery loans we're expecting to receive. Next slide. And I will turn that over to Commissioner Peterson.
Thanks. And I just say that, just an ending that this package, you know, wouldn't make anybody whole. I say that it helps pay a bill or two. This is something where the state, you know, if we're going to consider drought relief, this is something that we could do that would help a lot of folks. We visit with a lot of people about it. Again, we're open to suggestions on it and adding, but we wanted to put this framework out there, waiting till 2022 to pass the decision. If we don't do it, every day that ticks by is hard for us because we would have to, you know, design this, put it together. We kind of have an idea, but then put out the notice to farmers and then they would have to apply and then get the dollars out. But having that dollar amount, we could get some dollars in it, in their pockets would help, again, like I said, pay a bill or two and get through and get them strong into the next year. Because I think it is really important that we focus on all the farmers that we can keep and help get into that next season. And I can tell you with the dairy grants that folks that got those even $1,500 checks or a couple $1,000s, it did help a lot, when I was out talking to people. So next slide, I just urge your consideration. So thank you.
Chair Sundin, you're muted.
Sorry, thank you again for your testimony, Commissioners Peterson and Vopple. Next up, we have Gary Wordish from the Minnesota Farmers Union with some comments regarding the drought. Mr. Wordish, please identify yourself and offer your comments.
Thank you, Chair Sundin. I'm Gary Wordish, President of the Minnesota Farmers Union. And thanks for the opportunity to testify before you, Chairman, in the committee. And I really want to appreciate or a follow-up on the Commissioner Peterson and on Deputy Commissioner Vauble's remarks and the proposals they put forward. Rather than repeating all of that stuff, I can say, I was on a farm, a livestock farm this summer in that their pasture, that was mid-July, and their pasture at that time was already burnt up. So they were already feeding winter supply of their hay. granted, we've had some rainfall now recently this fall, so it does allow for some pasture, some, you know, little extended grazing for them at some point, but it doesn't make up for the hay that they lost. So we got two sets of producers here that are really getting hit the hardest, and one is obviously the livestock producer that relies on forage, and the small fruit and vegetable specialty crop producers. Those are the two areas of farmers that have really been hit the hardest. Our commodity farmers like corn and soybeans, you know, depending on where you are in the state, some areas they're actually getting surprisingly better yields than that they expected. In other areas are not. You know, that's understandable depending on when you caught the rain. But they do have a good safety net in their crop insurance to fall back on, which does help them. And, you know, granted, it's not going to make them whole. And there are, like I said, some areas hurt worse than others. But there's a couple items, you know, I really want to focus on. The USDA just announced, and Commissioner Peterson did mention that, the new microfarm policy that the Risk Management Agency created, this new policy based on research directed by the 2018 Farm Bill. And it includes feedback from the producers who grow for their local communities. The policy will be available beginning with the 2022 crop year. This is for producers who work to provide their communities with fresh and healthy food. The Snoop crop insurance policy was designed with that important sector of agriculture in mind. This new policy is offered through the Whole Farm Revenue Protection Program. And they'll be releasing more details later this fall. But, you know, that, and I want to follow up on, you know, Commissioner Peterson did mention that, you know, that when he put forward in 2019 the assistance by the crop insurance or the dairy assistance, that program that helped, this new micro loan program would help small and mid-sized producers, especially crops, get started with the risk management agency programs. Could be modeled after the dairy assistance investment and relief initiative that the legislature funded in 2019. The disruptions due not only to COVID, but the drought hit many of them direct market farmers hard, and they don't have the affordable coverage options to begin. Now it looks like USDA does have an option for them. And I think it would be it's going to be a new option for them, so they're going to be a little leery of taking it. But I think that's one area that if the state could help buy their premiums or pay for their premiums, that would be a big help. When we did it for the dairy producers, that did help a lot. It got a lot more people to sign up and pay and get into the dairy federal dairy program, and which in the end did help a lot of producers survive. You know, it all gets back to, you got to have a price, but you got to have a crop. You know, and the vegetables, small fruit and vegetables, their majority of them crops are shorter maturity, so the lack of rainfall, and a lot of those producers didn't have irrigation equipment to actually, you know, take care of their crops. Some of them are carrying water in buckets just to water their crop. So any help we can give them, and you know, they have a shorter maturity too. Even if they did catch a rain, a lot of times they came too late and their crop was already lost. So I guess that, you know, that would be the main thing, rather than repeating what the Department of Ag has put forward for the livestock producers and the small vegetables. I think any help we can do to help pay for this new microloan crop insurance program for the small fruit and vegetable farmers, that would be a big assistance. So with that, I think I want to thank you for your time, and thanks for hearing me.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Werdish. We allocated time for the Minnesota Farmers Union. Did anyone step forward to offer testimony? Nancy Connolly?
Chair Sundin, Kevin Papp from the Farm Bureau is on the call.
Okay, terrific. Thank you, Mr. Papp. Please identify yourself and offer your comments.
Can you hear me okay?
Perfectly, thank you.
All right, thank you. Appreciate the flexibility for this. My name is Kevin Papp. I'm a corn and soybean farmer from Blue Earth County, also president of Minnesota Farm Bureau, and just stepping off the combine and jumping in the vehicle here for a little better Wi-Fi. We won't get into broadband today, but really want to thank the committee for this important hearing on this important topic. you know, care for our livestock and crops is a top priority for Minnesota farmers and ranchers. And we understand farming is all about supply and demand. And that supply has got an awful lot to do with the weather. And as we think about agriculture, is all about providing a reliable food supply, and it also needs to be a reliable feed and water supply. And we've talked already about the different things, crop insurance, the chance to, nothing's going to make anybody whole, but some things are covered better than others. And I guess as we look at the livestock, we want to make sure we have that reliable, not only feed, but also water supply in the future. And livestock farmers this year kind of had to do both. They had to buy and sell. They had to buy more hay because of their third of a normal crop, 2 to 3 times more expensive, certainly, and then sell those calves not only earlier, but lighter. So I have some real concerns about how the livestock families are weathering the storm and are in the support of the package put together by the Department of Ag. So again, thank you for this very important topic. Hopefully we'll get some soil recharged this fall. You know, we were lucky from a crop perspective. We had that money in the bank, that soil moisture. We don't have that for next year, but hopefully we can get that. And I would be happy to answer any questions, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Papp. Appreciate you chiming in here today. We can move to questions. I see one hand up, Chair Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I would maybe add another category for maybe a component of payment, and that would be debt relief. There may be a farmer, specialty farmers that have a payment. And so in addition to the fencing or the water, if there was a one-time allowing for debt relief to use those funds to pay for making a payment, that might help out as well. I was listening to Commissioner Peterson saying folks needed some cash, and if that cash can be used for debt relief for those producers, I think that would be useful. And at least, again, that is someone who's going to need that help. I want to make sure that we're not writing checks to folks who are very, very well off. And I think having a debt relief option as a proper use would be there. And also with the Rural Finance Authority, if that could be used for refinancing existing debt that they maybe had got through the commercial market previously. So those are two questions about using the funds, if the commissioner or the farm groups have any thought, if they've talked about that.
Commissioner Peterson, would you like to respond?
Yeah, so first I'll take on the RFA, and definitely is one thing we should also talk about. You know, the RFA is kind of cumbersome in explaining it, but we have two different ways. The committee, if you remember, you gave us $50 million. That goes into our general obligation bonds, where we pay back the bonds. We have our beginning farm loan and other thing in that. We still have a lot of money in that, but that's in a separate account from where the disaster loan is in a revolving loan account. But also in that suite of loans that uses the revolving account, Representative Hansen, to is also a debt restructuring loan. And so we also have done a few of those. And so it's a good reminder that our interest rates are really low right now. And by the way, the interest rate on that disaster loan is 0%. And so, and has a good payback, so you don't have to make payments for, I think it's almost a year. So that is something we could consider. On the debt relief, you know, I think it's just a question of how we want to do it. And it's something we've been looking at. We didn't necessarily want to do just like a direct payment. The USDA also warned us about doing a direct payment because that could make producers ineligible for another payment if the federal government came from something. So it's something that we could definitely look at. You'll also see that we've talked with farm groups and farmers about this too, is we're not buying feed or hay directly. We're wondering about the state doing that, and we kind of shied away from that just because we didn't want to impact the price, but we're open to the discussion on it. So that's something, if we could word it correctly, I'd be totally open to. Again, we want to help folks that this would be helpful too. So good comments. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Commissioner. I guess I would open this up to Mr. Werdish or Mr. Papp if they have any comments to add at this point.
I can, Chairman.
Mr. Werdish.
Obviously, you know, any type of debt relief for targeted payments, you know, I think the bottom line is we have to remember we want to help as many farmers as possible to keep farmers on the farm. So we really want to target the relief that it's going to go to the ones that actually need it. You know, and, you know, it's been mentioned, we need, you know, that's just in everybody's best interest, you know, to say there's going to be a limited amount of dollars that we're able to help, and it's not going to make anybody whole. But I think we do want to look at whether it's debt relief or the targeting, but keep in mind, we want to keep as many farmers as possible on the farm.
Thank you, Mr. Werdish.
To a smaller farmer, a limited amount of dollars can make a big difference, and that might be enough whether he stays on the farm and part of the local community, you know, versus another one. It, you know, the dollars are limited, so it really does make a difference. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Werdish. Mr. Papp, did you have any comments?
Just to add that, again, this isn't going to make anybody whole. We maybe need a lot of a certain amount of help from more than one source. And our concern would be we wouldn't want to do anything that would restrict farmers or ranchers from taking care of other, taking of use of other tools from the federal government. So just caution on doing anything that would eliminate the ability to use a federal program. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Representative Lippert, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a couple comments. I want to thank the department for the work on this package. I feel like it's focused on the areas of greatest need. And as Mr. Werdish was saying, you know, we want to help farmers stay on the farm. I'm especially appreciative of the inclusion of support for specialty producers, as that support is, risk management support is just often not there. I had one vegetable farmer just north of Northfield share with me this summer that in a hailstorm, you know, last summer he lost $60,000 in 3 minutes and didn't have a chance to recoup that. And so also very interested in what Mr. Werdish was talking about and supporting specialty producers getting into the new federal option that's available. I think any support we can provide there would really go a long ways to making sure that those farms have that risk management piece in place so they can sustain themselves going forward. And that's good for that part of agriculture and for our communities in Minnesota. So thanks for the work on this, and hopefully we can come in a special session and improve it.
Thank you, Representative. Representative Anderson, please. You're muted.
There we go. Thanks, Mr. Chair. Just a comment and a question. Thanks to Commissioner Peterson for certainly making himself available this summer. He's been all over the state visiting and talking with farmers and being a supportive listener for us when we have had to deal with the stresses of this year. And just a question to him. You mentioned the IRFA is running low on funding. And if there's not a special session before we come back in the end of January, will the funding stretch that far, or will it get down to near the basement, near the bottom?
Mr. Peterson?
Yep. Mr. Chairman and Representative Anderson, thank you. And also thank you for reaching out, not just as a representative, but also as a farmer. You know, it is really helpful to hear firsthand as commissioner, unfortunately, some of the, what's going on across the state. So the RFA, you know, and like I said in this, I think it said in the slide, we have 3 million, but actually we've done a little bit less than that revolving accounts. So we have under 3 million. And so, you know, it really depends. We could maybe make it from here, where we are at today, till the first part of session with that 3 million. It really depends on if the loans come in or not. I know a couple that are, you know, looking at contemplating that, where their loan may be, these would be where grain farmers may use this too, that could be a couple hundred thousand. So if you take a few of those loans at a couple hundred thousand, it could go very quickly. We don't know, always where, but we just in the inquiry, and even, myself, I was at the Cambridge Farmers Market this last weekend and talked to a farmer who's working with actually my bank, and they're trying to figure out, what the actual amount's going to be. And so they're kind of waiting to see. So we could maybe get by, but it would be tough if we got to January or February and we ran out of dollars. Then we would be asking you in the first week of session or so to do an appropriation. Those are hard to do, like standalone appropriations, like the first week or two in sessions as an emergency. And I don't know if we could use state dollars or something like that. And so, there's a chance maybe nobody applies, but we're just thinking with the volume that we have that we'll have applications. And that $5 million, would be a one-time, would stay in that account forever and revolve. That's the nice thing about that. And that goes for restructure loans. As we said, you all, also the legislature, and some of you may not remember this, but in 2020, we made it so that we could do COVID loans too as a disaster, and we've done over 20 of those to help farmers get through COVID. And then just a reminder, we have a great payback on that too, and in a very low default rate on those loans. So that's, I hope that kind of answers it in a roundabout way. So it's something that would be helpful to do, but we might be able to skate by.
Thank you, Commissioner. Any other further comments for testifiers or discussion before the committee? Okay, I'd like to thank all of the testifiers on both topics today for being concise and clear with their answers and questions. And it's much appreciated. That put us a little bit ahead of schedule, and we will be adjourning shortly, but those of us that will be going to the back to school at the university, the address is 1333 Gortner Avenue, St. Paul. 1333 Gortner Avenue, St. Paul.
Mr. Chair. So,
yes, ma'am.
It's 1395.
Oh, boy. I've got a different address here. Let's hear it from the committee administrator. What is the address?
1395 Gortner Avenue.
95 Gortner. Okay, I stand corrected, and I hope everyone else is too.
Mr. Chair, the lunch is at 1333, but where we're actually going to the parking ramp is 1395.
Okay, I stand corrected. Mr. Papp, last question. You see your hand up. Maybe it's an accident.
No, thank you, Mr. Chair. May I go ahead?
Yes, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I wasn't sure of your schedule. I would have just make one more comment. We've talked a lot about insurance and grants and things like this. The great thing about agriculture, it's renewable. Our crop is certainly down this year, not as bad as some, but crop insurance doesn't make you whole, but that helps, and you get to kind of start over next year. The thing I'd like the committee members to understand, those that are not directly involved in agriculture, the crops and livestock isn't exactly the same many times. Crops will start over again with a new crop next year. As we've seen some of this livestock and the need to have to sell part of the herd because you didn't have the food or water, the feed to do that, that's many times a generation of genetics of that breeding and things like that. And that's something that you can't replace just next spring or anything else. And just want to be aware of that. And adding value is so important to this state, whether it's through renewable fuels, whether it's through animal agriculture or international trade. But as we lose some of that livestock industry, especially those folks that maybe are a little older, they might not get back in. And that's not only not good for our farms and ranches, but that's not good for our community or our state. So just wanted to make the point that you know, having to sell that genetics, that breeding that you spent a generation putting together, is a high cost that we many times don't understand. Thank you for those ability for those extra comments.
Mr. Chair, you're on mute.
Hey, thank you, Mr. Papp, and I again thank the committee for their participation today, and looking forward to a tour at the U, so at 1395 Gortner Avenue, St. Paul. So thank you again for all the participants today, and we are adjourned.